Jesus Paul. If you're visiting with us, we're thrilled that you're here. We'll have more to say about our visitors as we conclude, but we just want you to know how honored we are that you've chosen to bring your worship here to this place. We hope that our time together will build you up, make you stronger, and we'll be able to, as we studied this morning, face the fiery darts of the wicked one. You know, we began our discussion about Jesus' call, looking at what Jesus had to say to his disciples when he was calling his disciples to come and follow him. And then we spent a little bit of time looking at what Jesus said to Nicodemus when he wanted Nicodemus to be one of his disciples. Well, this morning we're going to turn our attention to a parable that Jesus tells in Luke, the 15th chapter. And in this context, the parable isn't the recording of a call specifically that Jesus gives, but it's a reminder of Jesus and his desire for us. And so we're going to use this as a jumping off point this morning for our discussion. And it's a discussion that reminds us that Jesus calls us even when we're mired in a self-created mess. We were reading in Ephesians, the 6th chapter this morning, about the armor that God gives us. And I believe it was Priscilla made the point that, you know, so many of our wounds are self-inflicted. And I know that that's true because I've self-inflicted a lot of wounds. I'm fond of saying if I'd known I was going to live this long, there's some things I wouldn't have done. And all of us can probably echo that statement. So let's look at Jesus' parable in Luke, the 15th chapter. And I'm sure this is a parable that's familiar to you. We're going to read it from the English Standard Version. It makes it really easy to understand. It's one of those simplified versions that takes the big, long sentences that the Apostle Paul is so fond of and breaks them down into shorter statements. Anyway, this is the way that it reads. Luke 15, beginning in verse 11. Jesus said, "There's a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of property that's coming to me.' And he divided his property between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all that he had and took a journey into a far country. There he squandered his property in reckless living. When he spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into his fields to feed pigs. He was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate. No one gave him anything. But then he came to himself. He said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread, but I perish here with hunger? I'll arise, go to my father, and say to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants.' He arose and came to his father, but while he was yet a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion and ran and embraced him and kissed him. The son said to his father, 'Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Bring quickly the best robe, put it on him, put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet. Bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let us eat and celebrate. This my son was dead and he's alive again. He was lost and is found.' and they began to celebrate. And this is one of three parables that's recorded for us here in Luke, the 15th chapter. Jesus has to defend his actions of receiving sinners. Whenever Jesus went, or wherever Jesus went, it seemed that he attracted people who had all kinds of problems. He was surrounded by prostitutes and publicans, tax collectors, the people that the Jews looked down on. And it caused a lot of murmuring among the Pharisees, in particular, that Jesus was willing to be seen with these kinds of people, the prostitutes, the tax collectors. These weren't people who were perhaps born with a deformity. These weren't people that were unfortunate victims of some of the many wars that the Jews had fought. For the most part, these were people that brought on themselves the difficulties that they were facing. Tax collectors didn't become tax collectors because the Romans forced them into it. For the most part, they wanted that job. And they wanted it because they could extort extra taxes from their fellow Jews. Prostitutes didn't become prostitutes because they were, for the most part, the victims of human trafficking. That wasn't something that happened in those days. It does happen today. And many of the victims of human trafficking have no intention of falling into that life. But these were people who intended to do it. They wanted to do it because it was good money. The three parables that Luke records all, I think, illustrate something very special. Something that's lost. In the first parable, the parable of the lost sheep, verses 1 through 7, we read about the shepherd who leaves those that are still with him in safety so that he can go work desperately for the sheep that's lost. Then in verses 8 through 10, he tells a parable about the lost coin. And goodness knows, I've been there. I've lost something that I desperately was seeking, and I looked everywhere for it. Usually it's my glasses, because I lay them down and can't remember where I put them. And then he tells this parable about the lost son. If you would look for a sheep, if you would look for your glasses or the coin that you had misplaced, I know that you would look for your son. And then, once that thing that's been lost is found, Jesus repeats on several occasions that there was great rejoicing. In the case of the first, the sheep that was lost, the shepherd says, "Be joyful for me, I found my sheep." In terms of the coin, the person who's lost the coin says, "Be joyful with me, I found my lost coin." And the father of the lost boy said, "This son of mine was dead, now he's alive again. He was lost, now he's found." Why would the Jews murmur about it? You know, sadly, this is the only parable of the three that records someone being bitter that something that was lost was found. We didn't read that part. When you get home this afternoon, read through the reaction of the older son. He didn't like the fact that his father rejoiced when this young boy returned. In fact, the record says the older brother became angry and he refused to go into the feast. And he defended himself and said, I've been with you always. I've always done what you asked me to do. And then there's this one. This one that took your wealth, squandered it, lived a riotous life. Now he comes home and you make him a feast. He couldn't stand that God was concerned about this boy that had, well, self-inflicted wounds upon himself. Let's think for just a minute about the parable. And think about those two boys. Before one left, both of them knew the same father. Then they both knew that he was a giving man. He had raised them well. And they both knew that he would give them what they asked for. Now, I'm not going to get into whether or not the father should have given his son what he'd asked for because he was enabling. That's not the point of the parable. But they both knew this loving father. And you know, most of us are in that position. We know our loving father. We know how much he cares for us. And sometimes, sadly, we're like the younger brother. They knew the compassion of their father. They knew that no matter what they did, their father would love them. One of them took advantage of that. He chose to leave all of that. And you know, it occurs to me when he came to his father and said, divide up the inheritance, give me that which is coming to me. He probably lied about what he was going to use it for. You know, I come from the state of Kentucky, which famously was settled by second sons from Virginia. Our country was, in some respects, like the Jews, in that the oldest son received the lion's share of the inheritance. In Virginia, the oldest son always received the property that his father had amassed in the state of Virginia. And so if you wanted to be anything, if you wanted to acquire any property, you probably had to go through the Cumberland Gap, come into Kentucky, and you could settle land there, and you could begin to build your own wealth. That's not what this boy did. It wasn't that he said to his father, give me what's coming to me. I'm going to go into a different country, and I'm going to make my own way. I'm going to make something of myself. And we sometimes say that. And that, in my mind, is a reasonable thing for a man to say to his father. But that's not what this boy wanted. Not what this boy did. This boy didn't suffer from unforeseen financial setbacks. He didn't take the property that his father had given him, the wealth that his father had amassed, go into a foreign country and start a good business and then have that business fall apart around his ears. That's not what he did. He didn't go into this foreign country And their encounter a war that he didn't have anything to do with. Kind of like Lot moving into the city of Sodom. It wasn't like this man struck out on his own with the best of intentions, using the money that his father had given him for honorable purposes. This boy suffered because he spent what he had on righteous living. He's, in the words of the English Standard Version, he squandered his wealth. Most of us have been there. We understand what that means. He squandered what he had. And because this young man used what he had in such an unholy way, he began to suffer consequences. He didn't have anything to eat. Money ran out. We talk about friends that we have because we have money, and how those friends desert us when we run out of money. Well, that's what happened to this man. He didn't have anything. But it wasn't because of unforeseen circumstances that happened to him. It wasn't because he had been born with a deformity and couldn't provide for himself. It wasn't that he was the victim of a war that he didn't start. This man decided to squander everything that he had. And eventually, he found himself at the bottom of a really deep hole, holding the shovel that was used to dig the hole. I've been there. And I know how terribly I felt. And I should. But God still cares. We're going to spend some time talking about how to come back to God when we've made the problem that we're facing ourselves. No doubt every one of us can identify with that in one way or another. If you're here this morning and you're thinking, that's me. I've done that. You need to return to God. He's promised that he will forgive you. He's promised that his compassion will not evaporate just because you created your own hole. He has a plan. You can return to it. James says, confess your faults one to another, pray one for another that you may be healed. And he gives a reason for that. He says, the effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. If you took what God gave you, if you took salvation, and then you squandered it, come back.